Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Brexit Means, The Guardian's weekly look at what taking back control entails in practice. This week, we're having one of our more in-depth looks at a sector of the economy that oughtn't to be too affected by leaving the EU, but has found itself in the eye of the storm. If anything, healthcare was meant to be a major beneficiary of leaving, at least if you believe the £350 million a week claim on the side of that bus. But our hospitals and care homes are also kept afloat with an army of EU workers, many of whom are feeling increasingly gloomy about their long-term future here. It's a big subject, and I'm sure our listeners want to hear about life on the front line. But before our ward round, I thought it was worth taking a second to look at the policy backdrop. If you only half listened to the government, you'd think it was all going to be fine. Both Theresa May and David Davis have said they want to keep existing EU nationals working here, and then have a system for allowing in new skilled immigrants. But the first promise depends on a far from certain divorce agreement with the rest of the EU, and the second is in direct contradiction with the continued promises to slash total migration. Then there are the numbers. According to the Health and Social Care Information Centre, 55,000 of the NHS's 1.3 million strong workforce and 80,000 of the 1.3 million workers in the adult social care sector come from other EU countries. With me to discuss what Brexit means for the NHS and healthcare more generally are two proper experts, Janet Davis, who is Chief Executive and General Secretary of the Royal College of Nursing, and Sarah Johnson, a journalist on our health team here at The Guardian, who writes and commissions specifically for our healthcare professionals network. So, Janet, the RCN, it's the world's largest nursing union and professional body. You represent more than 435,000 nurses, midwives, healthcare assistants, nursing students. What are you seeing? How bad is the recruitment shortage and what happens next?
Yeah, it's looking pretty bleak at the moment. We've got tens of thousands of vacancies across the UK for nurses. We haven't got enough student nurses qualifying because we haven't trained enough over the years. And we have been dependent on immigration. Well, actually, the NHS has always been slightly dependent on immigration, but particularly recently, we've been very dependent on the European market and the nurses who've trained in other countries of Europe coming to work with us in the NHS, and actually in care homes and the independent sector too. And what we are finding now is that certainly European trained nurses are not applying to come to the UK. They're not applying to join the register, which is where we see it. And an increasing number, in fact, a significant number, have already left the register, certainly in the last year. So what we're finding is that nurses are voting with their feet. I mean, they just don't want to wait for that security. Because nursing, it's not just a job. They come here for a career. Many of them want to settle here. And whilst there's that uncertainty, then many of our European colleagues are deciding, actually, they don't want to really stay and see what happens. They want to be absolutely sure of their future. So we are seeing a real exodus of our European nurses, which are leaving big holes in our workforce.
And you did a big survey, I think, in September on staff shortages. What were your members telling you about what it means in practice for patients, for their working conditions? What are the ramifications of this?
Well, what happens is that if we haven't got enough nurses to care for people, both in communities, in hospitals and other areas, is that the care is left undone. So over 50% of 30,000 of the nurses who spoke to us are saying that they go home often demoralised because they haven't been able to do the work that they know they should as a nurse. That really affects patient safety if things aren't done. Sometimes it seems like the added extras, such as having time to sit and talk to someone, listening to their stories, holding their hand, reassuring them, the things that are so important for nursing. But actually, that isn't the added extras. That's when you find out what's happening with people, if they're becoming unwell or there's something that they've not told us before that we need to treat. And so it's actually very dangerous not to have that time to spend with people, as well as just things like, you know, hygiene issues and things that are so fundamental. Some of those get left with just the life-saving work happens. And of course, in communities, you know, it's absolutely dependent on that nurse coming to visit you at home. If you don't get that, you end up critically ill and end up in A&E. And we all know that there's horrendous pressures in our A&Es at the moment.
So I want to come back a bit to some of the things you touched on there about the long-term causes of this. But just wanted to turn to Sarah. You recently wrote a big piece about staff burnout in the NHS. How stretched do you think healthcare professionals are feeling? And what's the emotional toll, particularly, say, on EU workers who, you know, already wondering whether they're actually welcome here? I mean, what are you hearing from our readers who work in this industry?
I think, first of all, the whole situation around Brexit in the NHS is defined by uncertainty and a lack of clarity. So it's already an extra thing to think about on top of everything else. So from our readers, it's a constant barrage of things that are going wrong. They're overstretched. They feel undervalued, they feel unsupported by management. They think the leaders of healthcare in this country have forgotten them, or if they haven't, they don't care. And this is happening to perhaps the most compassionate professionals in the UK. And, you know, they're having to deal with patient care every day. And of course, they are trying their best. And of course, they love their job. But with all this and with everything else, the existing recruitment problems, it's getting too much to bear. And I've been feeling this for the last couple of years, that things are really ramping up.
Mm. I was looking back at some of the things you've been writing, and you did a piece about a year ago, I think, that was a call out to our readers after the referendum, asking them what they thought Brexit might mean in the healthcare world. Did they come up with some of these concerns then? Are these new concerns, or are these things that should have been obvious for some time? I mean, what were people saying back then?
I think after the referendum, there was a real sense of betrayal among not just the EU staff, but among the NHS staff in general. I think a lot of the EU workers, they wrote in and were asking, why has this happened? They've dedicated their lives and their jobs to helping the UK public at their most vulnerable. And for them, for the public then to say, oh, actually, we don't want you, it must have been an emotional blow, and I think it was, and that's what came through from the many that got in touch. But yeah, I mean, among the UK NHS professionals as a whole, yeah, just this lack of certainty. I mean, it's really difficult to continue to deliver excellent patient care and do their job to their utmost with what's going to happen hanging over them.
And is that what you're hearing from your members too? What is your advice to members who find themselves in this position?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're talking to our members and trying to reassure them. We want to keep our European nurses. They're fantastic. You know, they're really well qualified. They've had brilliant experience, brilliant education, and they're giving so much to our NHS and our social care services. But we're trying to reassure them. We're trying to say that you will be able to stay, but actually we've not got the certainty either. So, you know, it's difficult because we're trying to reassure them and say how much we want them. We're trying to praise them. And I think employers are doing the same. But it's hard because actually we're as uncertain as everyone else. And of course, we don't always help with things like this. So sort of saying, oh, it's a cliff edge, which we are saying because it's true. So whilst we're trying to push the government into making some commitment,
you don't want to scare them at the same time.
We're also scaring our nurses. Yeah. So it is a hard balance for us, really. But, you know, they are so important to us. Mm. And we really don't want to lose them from our workforce. They're great colleagues.
And you were telling me as we sat down that you wear a couple of European-wide hats.
Yes, in the, yes.
Tell me about that. And particularly, you know, how competitive is the international landscape for recruiting nurses? It's presumably a very portable qualification.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, across Europe, of course, it's very different because we spent many years getting a directive which actually legislates the level of education a nurse has to have and the sort of experience they have to have, which means that it's equivalent across the whole of Europe, which really enables people to move freely. That's the whole point of it. But what it has done is lifted the level of education in some areas. And actually, it helps us with some of the attacks we sometimes have on the level of education of nurses to make sure that our patients are safe and getting good care across Europe. It's been really very, very helpful in terms of both British nurses working across Europe and European colleagues coming to us. But it's a huge competitive market. Everybody is short of nurses. It's a global shortage of nurses because obviously we're living longer all across the world, you know, including the developing world. Healthcare is getting better, and therefore people are living longer with more complex conditions, and these are the sort of areas where nurses really come into their own. So there is a choice. Every nurse has a choice of where they might want to work all across the world. We always see movement towards, from Britain in particular because of the language issues, we see lots of our nurses moving to Australia, New Zealand, to the States, but that's the same for all our colleagues. And in fact, we did some work with our European organisations, our sister organisations across Europe, to see where that flow was. And, you know, we're very arrogant in the UK. We always think they want to come here. Actually, we're not the number one. The number one across Europe for places to work was Germany. So, you know, I think we can sometimes think that, oh, yeah, everyone wants to come and work in the NHS. Actually, no, there are health services better than ours. And it's not always the number one. So it's really desperate for us that we still continue to attract people from around the world.
And how have we... How's this shortfall come about, quite apart from the sort of extra demand that you talked about in an ageing population and so forth? But, I mean, has there been a lack of planning, do you think, on the training side? Is pay a big factor? Are we not paying people enough? Or have we just sort of used EU workers as a sort of crutch to not solve problems with domestic training? I mean, how would you,
It's a combination of all of them, really. So the first thing is we've been very woeful. It's been terrible workforce planning for nurses for as long as I can remember. And the reason for that is that the way that the workforce plans have always been developed is by those employers of nurses saying how many nurses they'll need in the next 3-4 years, and then the training places are commissioned. And of course, what they've tended to do is to actually identify the number of nurses they think they can afford in 3 or 4 years, which is never going to be enough for the healthcare that's required. On top of that, and of course, the focus on the money is always a big problem in our NHS. On top of that, we've also got the fact that there's never really taken account of the wider healthcare service. So it's okay to do that for the NHS, and then they add some. But actually, we've got a growing number of care homes as we get older, growing number of nursing homes that require qualified nurses. We've got the independent sector, and we've also got places such as, I always think the people that are forgotten are those occupational health nurses who might work on a building site or in different organisations. They all require registered nurses, and that has never been, there's never been a really good approach to workforce planning. So we've always ended up short of nurses. Mm. Occasionally we have too many, but we don't really have too many. We have, when that appears to be too many, it's because the NHS is in such dire financial straits, they're not recruiting and they're holding vacancies. And that's such a terrible sort of yo-yo approach that we've always had. So that's the nub of it. And then we have always had a supplement from different parts of the world ever since the NHS started, from different places. It was originally, of course, it was from the Commonwealth, and now it's Europe. But actually, what there's a panic that occurs when suddenly we're very, very short of nurses, when we have these mad rushes to go overseas, to the Philippines, to Europe, to actively bring people in from other countries because we failed in our workforce planning.
But just to play devil's advocate for a moment, and this might be a bit provocative, but I'm sure you'll take it in the right sense. You're both a professional body and a union.
We are.
And so wearing your sort of union hat, is there an element of this that could actually be quite helpful in helping people recognise the importance of the profession and perhaps help drive up wages? I mean, is this a way that's going to force the UK to think more seriously about paying nurses properly?
Yeah, I mean, pay is one of the elements. And of course, we've got, as a trade union, and actually as a professional body, because actually there's not that much difference in safe staffing is so important. It's what enables us to get good care, and it's what enables us to survive and get a safe health service. So I think, you know, from whichever hat I'm wearing, that the message is the same, really. We need to retain our very good qualified nurses as well as attract more. And one of those issues is pay. I mean, the value of our health service and the value of our professions, I don't think is really seen. Everyone says really nice things about nursing. You know, they're the most trusted profession and everyone thinks they're great, but nobody's willing to pay more taxes to pay their wages. The health service, I think, is incredibly underfunded at the moment. And there needs to be a serious conversation away from party politics on how much are we willing to pay for a good world-class health service. Otherwise, we keep staggering on like this. And of course, one of the main things is who provides that healthcare and how much are we willing to pay them. It's terrible that it comes to a critical condition where we're losing our nurses before those decisions are made. And I think we need to have a much more proactive approach to how we fund rather than staggering from one crisis to the other.
I suppose that's what I meant, really, to flip the question round, that some Brexiteers would say, actually, this is what one of the reasons they voted Leave is because they wanted employers, all employers, to think more carefully about long-term staff retention and not just rely on an endless supply of being able to sort of import our way out of recruitment problems. And I just wonder whether, despite everything we've said about these being hugely important parts of our NHS today, that some of these workers have allowed the government of the day to neglect long-term retention in the industry.
It's an interesting approach. I mean, I don't know whether it's Brexit related, because it's certainly immigration related, because we have always recruited people from overseas. Number one, probably the Philippines. In the past, in the 60s, from the Caribbean. We've always had recruitment crises in nursing, and we go out and try and bring people in from other countries that have got nurses. Ireland is consistent. We, all through the history of the NHS, we've recruited nurses from Ireland. So it is actually about immigration more than Brexit. It's more than Europe. And, you know, already we can see our health service looking beyond Europe for their recruitment. So there is a focus on other countries, actually, who can ill afford to lose nurses. And that's where the focus goes. So I don't think that losing our European nurses will prevent immigration into the health service. Mm. I think we will still be very much looking at boosting our workforce with people. And of course, in a lot of ways, it's really positive. They bring very different experience, and they bring maturity, and sharing those ideas and getting those different experiences is very positive, I think, for our healthcare. So we would always want some movement of professionals around countries to do that, but certainly not in the dependent way that we are currently doing so.
And dealing presumably with a much more diverse population these days, right? I mean, you know,
absolutely,
you want a diverse workforce to reflect the fact your patients are from all
absolutely
sorts of
yes. I mean, I think, you know, I think people sometimes, when they think about nursing and health professionals, they go back to some of those old films of the 40s and 50s, when the population was different and healthcare was very different. We need a workforce that actually reflects the population, but also, you know, reflects the changing need of healthcare delivery.
Mm. So I wanted to turn to this broader question of funding. Sarah, you jump in as well, because I think this is more than just a nursing question, but a sort of a political question about Brexit and the NHS. And I wanted to read you something that Simon Stevens, who's the chief executive of NHS England, is due to say later today in a speech. And I think it's the first time I've certainly seen anybody senior within the NHS drawing a very specific reference to Brexit in the debate about NHS funding. And he's due to say in this speech, the NHS wasn't on the ballot paper, but it was on the battle bus. And it's a very interesting and provocative reference to this £350 million a week figure that the Leave campaign famously put on the side of the bus. Now, whether or not you think the £350 million figure was true or fair from a Brexit perspective, it did link the issue in voters' minds. And I wonder whether either of you think there is an extent to which the Brexiteers owe the NHS in a way. You know, that there is a sort of, you know, part of the reason we voted for this is because we thought we were also bringing money back to invest in healthcare. Do you think that's relevant, or is this a focusing too much just on a bus?
So I think Simon Stevens, I think this is a political play, actually, because all the top healthcare leaders are pushing for more money. And I think with the referendum and Brexit, their demands are not being heard. I think Brexit is taking centre stage. So I think Simon Stevens linking Brexit with more money for the NHS is a really clever move.
Cheeky,
but he's got to do what he's got to do, and he needs more money. If he didn't link it, I mean, I think this captures the attention of a lot of politicians who I think could put NHS and social care, because that's also really important, on the back burner in terms of finances. It will be interesting to see how people react to this. I think he was also clever in saying, in not making explicit reference to the £350 million a week, I think it was.
It was a hint rather than a sort
Yeah, it was a hint, because I think that was unrealistic. But in kind of, he's kind of doing an emotional play because, you know, everyone's voted for Brexit and they did use the NHS as a major major thing in their campaign. So, you know, if that helped win the vote, then maybe they should really think about, you know, prioritising the NHS and giving it more money.
I mean, Janet, the Brexit has sucked a lot of the oxygen out of the political room in the last few months. There's been almost nothing else in the headlines, which is an unusual absence for the NHS, because it's normally, at least every winter, it's normally a massive political flashpoint. I mean, do you think that it's only a question of time before it comes back up the agenda?
I think we're getting a fair amount of coverage at the moment, considering what's happening, which actually is a sign of how difficult it is, that there actually is something. Where our concerns are is that actually it's taking the mind of the Chancellor. So really, as we get close to a budget where we really need significant investment in the NHS, we certainly need a significant pay rise for our staff, particularly our nurses, who we're campaigning for. And we're really concerned that the whole issue of Brexit and the negotiations and the money that's going to be required might be taking the Chancellor's eye off something that is really necessary in the NHS. And of course, Simon Stevens, in some ways, with what he's saying, is reflecting what our nurses are saying. Actually, these words are spoken still. They're spoken by nurses. They're spoken in hospital wards. They will say, where's our money? It is something that people noticed, and it is something that actually many nurses who talk to us say that, you know, they thought that was a promise, and it did influence the way they voted.
Really. I mean, it looked like one, didn't it?
Yeah.
So I just wanted to turn finally to something else that's been worrying me, which is the broader anti-immigrant sentiment that Brexit arguably either unleashed or reflected, depending on your point of view. And I wonder the extent to which the NHS and nurses in particular find themselves on the front line of this. I mean, we're in the middle of very detailed negotiations about whether we will have reciprocal healthcare arrangements with the EU, whether Brits abroad will continue to be able to have e-hit cards and walk into European hospitals, and vice versa. But one doesn't have to imagine too hard the kind of scenario where we do leave without a deal, where there is an acrimonious breakdown. And suddenly hospitals and nurses in particular are potentially on the front line of a very angry sort of state of affairs about quote unquote foreigners using our public services, which seems to be simmering below the surface of a lot of the Brexit debate. I wondered what either of you two felt about that, and whether you've had experience of your members already worrying about, are there creeping pressures to sort of, are nurses required to sort of ask for residency proof or nationality proof when granting care? And what's your experience of that?
Yeah, I mean, that is happening. Not for Europeans at the moment, but there's two things really. One is about the worry about having to do that when you're caring for people in a national health system. You know, our system is free at the point of delivery, and that's the way it's designed. So it's really difficult to actually put a system in that checks that. And I know we compare it with other health systems, but in other health systems, it isn't free necessarily at the point of contact, or they have their particular cards and things. So it is hard to actually do that in a system such as ours. But it's also about those nurses themselves feeling unwelcome. And there have been, I mean, initially there was some really terrible stories that we heard from some nurses who, you know, were being asked, what are you doing here? Why are you still here? And I mean, I think a very strange thing to ask when someone's caring for you. But sadly, we do see that. It's pretty shocking, I think. But certainly that whole system that would have to be in place would need another amount of investment. It's more people, different system. So okay, it might bring money in, but it's certainly something that will be distracting NHS from providing the services it currently does.
Is this something you've picked up that our readers are concerned? Is this something that comes up in what you're writing on the Professionals Network?
Yeah, for sure. Both in terms of healthcare staff being asked what they're doing in this country and when they're going to return home, which is completely bizarre. But also in terms of their job is not to police immigration, and they really feel that. I've heard anecdotally that there might be forms coming in that people have to fill out about their immigration status. But I mean, how, if you're on a busy A&E nurse, how are you meant to enforce that? Also, in terms of vulnerable people who need to access healthcare, asylum seekers and refugees, how's that going to affect their status? How's that going to affect their claims? I think it's just a big mess waiting to happen.
Mm. So I suppose to wrap up, what would you like to see the government do? I mean, if you work from the basis that we are leaving, we may or may not have some sort of divorce settlement and an agreement on how we leave. What's the best way of reassuring EU workers, do you think, about that how valued they are here? And could you imagine, for example, Janet, a working skills-based immigration system plugging this gap? Or do we need to be more embracing in terms of the rights that we offer workers here in order to continue attracting those numbers?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is that there needs to be an absolute guarantee that people who are working here in our NHS can stay. That's the number one thing, so we don't lose any more. In terms of future immigration, we will always need nurses from outside the UK, and we really need a consistent system of making it easier for nurses to come and work in this country. The current system is expensive for nurses. It's also quite difficult, and of course, all the measures that we seem to have in this country is based on earnings and salaries. And a nurse is never going to reach that level of salary which enables people to come and work in this country. Now, obviously, there's two options to that. The one we prefer, obviously, is to pay nurses what is considered a professional salary by the immigration authorities.
That would be a start, wouldn't it?
Obviously, that is one of the measures that proves that nursing actually perhaps isn't seen as professional as it is. If nurses can't reach that level of you know, that level of salary that's considered relevant for a professional who can come in this country. But obviously the more likely one is that we need to maintain nursing on the shortage list. They're currently on there, but it's only temporary. It took a lot of lobbying for us to get nursing onto the shortage list. And I think it's really important that we have an arrangement for nurses because they don't reach that threshold.
What sort of turnover are there among staff members, both UK and EU nationals?
I mean, there's always a turnover, and it's different in different places. People move jobs, they move with family, they sometimes leave the NHS. But actually, we've reached a point this year which is very unusual and very significant. And the figures that have come from the Nursing and Midwifery Council, so that's not ourselves, that's the regulator of nursing who holds that register, for the first time have seen more people leaving the register than joining the register. And that's a really worrying trend if that continues.
Mm. Any final thoughts on what you'd like to see the government do to help reassure people working in this sector?
I'd like to see them make some decisions. I'd like to see people that work for the NHS stay working for the NHS. I don't think we can afford to lose any more skilled professionals. And I'd like to see them really reassure staff and give them some clarity over what the future holds.
Seems like a good note to leave it on. Thank you very much for both coming in. Please subscribe and review on all your favourite podcatchers and join the discussion on Twitter. Just search for Guardian Podcasts. If you want to get in touch, it's brexitpodcast@theguardian.com. Till next week, I've been Dan Roberts. The producer is Rowan Slaney, and this was Brexit Means. Thank you for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.